Hi, I'm Mel Majoros. I am a 7-year cancer survivor. My blog, The Cancer Warrior, is one of the top 10 breast cancer blogs, according to blogs.com. I'm here to bring a fresh, upbeat perspective to a topic that to some may seem scary. A positive mental attitude got me through my cancer, and I hope to share that with you. So I had a couple weeks off and a hockey season, but you all know how that goes for me. But I'm back, and Angelina Jolie was in the news yet again. She had a hysterectomy, oophorectomy. We're going to talk about that in a little bit with my good friend Amy Byer Shaneman. Did I pronounce that correctly?
You did, Mel.
I know you. I know you for a long time, but you know what? Last names always always get to me.
And I've been spelling that last name out now for 15 years.
I also have Georgia Hurst. She's a Lynch syndrome reviver and patient advocate for those with hereditary cancer syndromes. And we also have Alan Matloff, who's hanging out in the background, who is going to give us any information just in case we have any questions about any genetics. She's the genetic counselor and the president and CEO of My Gene Council. It sounds really important, but she's really a cool person to talk to. So it doesn't, doesn't let that go to her head at all. I've had Amy on the show before, as well as Ellen. But Georgia, we don't know much about your story, so why don't you let us know a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So, hi, my name is Georgia Hurst, and I am a previvor. I hold a mutation for Lynch syndrome, and I found out about it 4 years ago. There's a strong family history of colon cancer in my family, and my brother died at the age of 36 from colon cancer 20 years ago. And then my other brother was diagnosed 5 years ago with colon cancer. He ended up having 3 feet of his colon removed at that time.
Whoa.
And then 6 months later, the colon cancer came back with a vengeance. And that's when they decided to test him for Lynch syndrome. Fortunately, his doctor was aware of Lynch. And so that's when I discovered that I may also hold it. So I immediately got tested and did my own research and met with a genetic counselor and went through the testing process and discovered that I too hold the mutation. And a couple weeks after I found out my status, I had the prophylactic hysterectomy and oophorectomy at the age of 40. And I was a very healthy, vibrant 40-year-old. The experience of forced menopause was absolutely hellacious for me. It took me a couple years to really get to the point where I was feeling better. But it was such a hellacious experience that I was trolling the internet trying to find information comparable to what I was going through from other people, especially those who have Lynch syndrome, and there was really nothing out there.
So why was it so hellacious? Just the hot flashes, the...
Well, so basically, I was suffering from migraines, lethargy, debilitating nausea, vomiting. You know, it ran the gamut pretty much. Everything you could possibly experience. The hot flashes were probably the least of my concerns. I would say the nausea was the worst thing of all. Having constant nausea for a year was just the absolute worst because you can't really function. You have to lie down the entire time with nausea.
Right.
So I had to seek out several doctors before I was able to get the correct amount of hormone replacement therapy, and it wasn't solely estrogen that I needed. I also needed a cocktail of hormones, which included progesterone and testosterone, and I had to seek psychological and psychiatric help as well.
Oh.
So there were a constellation of factors that really were necessary to help me get to the point where I am today. So basically, I started blogging about my journey with Lynch syndrome and the emotional gravity of the situation and what the prophylactic hysterectomy entailed for me. And I basically just started blogging as a catharsis to vent for a few months. And I was just going to do it for 3 months and then shut it down. And UCSF had contacted me about a month after I started blogging.
On your blog site, which is, you got to promote it here.
It's called IHaveLynchSyndrome.com.
Okay.
And their genetic counselors reached out to me and they were like, who are you? Please keep doing what you're doing. It's so important for your voice to be heard. We need more awareness for Lynch syndrome. And so from there, I just kept blogging, and then I got invited to go to conferences and things have evolved tremendously. And so now I have become a non-for-profit. I just received my status a couple of weeks ago.
Awesome.
And I'm a 501c3. So in the meantime, Amy and I met about a year ago on a tweet chat, and we kind of thought it would behoove all of us if we could focus more on hereditary cancer syndromes rather than our own specific syndromes.
Right.
Because we recognize there were so many emotional and physical parallels between the various hereditary cancer syndromes. And that is when we reached out to Ellen Matloff, the genetic counselor extraordinaire, and asked her if she would be interested in partnering with us for these tweet chats that we hold every month. And thus far, we've had three of them, and they have been very successful, and we're very proud of them. And basically what we're doing is we bring up a topic, mm-hmm. we bring in a special guest who's usually an expert in the field, and we talk about something. So our last tweet chat was about colon cancer. Since March is Colon Cancer Awareness Month, and we had Dr. Allison Ocean from the Jay Monahan Center, who's a medical oncologist, come in and help us guest moderate the chat, and she was able to answer people's questions and whatnot. And Ellen, of course, is, you know, the genetics expert for us. And then Amy and I really provide the patient perspective, more or less. And, you know, it's something that we're very proud of, and I just can't tell you how pleased we all are that this collaboration has been so successful. And we're just really excited because we really think we're going to make a huge dent in advocacy efforts and increase awareness and provide people with knowledge and the resources that they need to help them through their hereditary cancer journey.
Well, you said you think, but you really are right now.
We are. I'm trying to be modest.
Well, we need to tell everybody it's called HC Chat on Twitter, and I just put up our own HC Chat page, but the transcripts from our last chats are available.
Awesome. So I have a question. So, I mean, I know about the BRCA gene, but you had the Lynch syndrome gene, but then why did you get your hysterectomy, oophorectomy, if Lynch syndrome is colon cancer? Or am I confusing everything together? I mean, that's what I'm kind of...
So basically, Lynch syndrome has implications for over a dozen body parts, unfortunately.
Oh.
It's primarily of the colon, so there's about an 80% chance that I will develop colon cancer in my lifetime. So basically, there's colon cancer, but women with Lynch syndrome are also susceptible to developing ovarian and endometrial cancer.
Okay.
And Georgia, could I jump in here for one moment?
Yes.
So Lynch syndrome can be caused by mutations in five different genes. And as it turns out, where your mutation is, depending on what gene it has, really your risks can look quite different. And so there are some of the genes involved with Lynch syndrome that if in your family you have a mutation in this gene, your risks for ovarian cancer might be quite small, but your risks may be higher for other things. Colorectal cancer is kind of the theme of Lynch syndrome. It goes through all of the genes. But Georgia, sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to make sure to say that if you're listening and you have Lynch syndrome, make sure that you find out where your mutation is and which gene, because it could be a very different list of risks for you and a very different list of recommendations for you.
Oh, good to know. See?
Right. Thank you, Ellen.
You're welcome.
And so it was recommended by my genetic counselor since I had been finished. I was done completing my childbearing years that I undergo the prophylactic hysterectomy and oophorectomy, which reduces my chances of developing ovarian and endometrial cancer. It doesn't eliminate it completely, but it significantly reduces it. And so I'm sorry.
I mean, Ellen, can you give some percentage numbers maybe of how drastically that would reduce her risk for ovarian and uterine cancer?
Yeah, absolutely. I think most people will tell you that for even someone with Lynch syndrome who's had their uterus and their ovaries removed, mm-hmm. their chance of ever developing an ovarian cancer or a primary peritoneal cancer or an endometrial cancer is less than it is for the average person walking down the street. Can it happen? Absolutely. But it's a tiny, tiny risk at this point.
Oh, so that reminds me.
Yes.
What I wanted to say when I had my little brain lapse was that the reason they recommended the removal of the ovaries is because the screening for ovarian cancer at this time is very, very poor.
Oh, yes.
Which is very important to talk about. And I wanted to significantly reduce my risk because through my reading, I discovered ovarian cancer is not something I wanted to deal with because usually by the time it's diagnosed,
it's too late.
It's too late. Correct.
Right. And some of the symptoms are just like just an upset stomach or heartburn. So if you know, and that could last for a while. I mean, I've had people on where they're like, well, it's kind of like if you've had like a bad Mexican meal, it just kind of feels like, oh, that just doesn't feel right. But if you have that for, you know, over more than a couple of days, I would definitely suggest you see your doctor.
That's correct. So, so that's how everything evolved and mm-hmm. that's how we're all together now. So, it's been a very interesting journey, and I'm glad that we've been able to collaborate to get the word out.
How do people react when they find out you're a previvor?
Is that for Georgia?
Yes, for Georgia. Sorry.
Can you be a little more specific?
Well, I mean, I know that cancer patients will understand, but people who are sort of out of the cancer world, unlike us, who say, well, you had a hysterectomy and oophorectomy, and I know you know where I'm going to lead this to. Mm-hmm. How do they react like, well, that's kind of weird, even though they might not understand the whole Lynch syndrome thing? Like, before you explain the genetic information to them, are they like, well, you know, why don't you just, like, keep your ovaries, keep your uterus? What's, you know?
Well, I think, you know, it varies based on the person.
Right.
It was very interesting. I mean, I had medical doctors telling me that they didn't think it was appropriate I take them out, but these weren't necessarily doctors that were gynecologists or, you know, these were just regular general practitioners or, you know, people who weren't really well-read on Lynch syndrome. A lot of my friends, when I was diagnosed, were not capable of understanding the gravity of the diagnosis mm-hmm. and I think they thought I was taking radical measures to do this. So I think, you know, a lot of people are very limited in their understanding of this. So you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place when you're diagnosed with a deleterious gene mutation.
Right.
And so if you get genetic counseling and you get the testing and you know your genetic fate doesn't necessarily
Okay.
Your genetic destiny doesn't have to Ellen, do you know what I'm trying to say here?
I do. I think what she's trying to say
it's
is
all
like,
chemo brain. It's all right.
What your genetics says is in store for you, you can change the cards.
Okay.
And
exactly.
You can take it into
Thank
your own
you.
Hands. And one thing that we say in my company is we can put you in the driver's seat of your own DNA.
Sweet.
And what we mean by that is if you have the information and you have the options and you have the resources, you can actually change your destiny.
Well,
is that what you meant, Georgia?
Yes, your genes do not have to determine your destiny.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say. Thank you.
So getting to that, now the other reason why I had you guys on besides needing an awesome guest and talking to Amy is the whole Angelina Jolie, you know, she had that double mastectomy, a couple years ago. Now she had a hysterectomy, oophorectomy, and now there's people who say, good for her, and then you have other people saying, why is she doing that? And she's going to force... I've read articles where they say, well, you know, if she does it, then other people are just going to do it because she's Angelina Jolie, which I find preposterous. But, you know, what do you guys think about that whole, you know... I mean, we're all applauding her for her decision based upon her genetics, since her mother died when she was young. But I mean, what do you feel about the whole like back and forth between some people saying that's great and other people saying, well, she's a celebrity, she just wants to get more exposure, which, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that seems pretty silly. I think Angelina probably has more exposure and more money
right?
than she knows what to do with.
And I don't think this is how she wanted exposure anyway.
No, it isn't.
I don't think
sure.
this is the exposure she was looking for. No, I mean, you know, why should anybody really be telling anyone else what they should be doing about anything, let alone, you know,
right.
really personal health decisions? And I think it just, you know, cancer risk management decisions, it's really important to note that they are very, very personal, highly patient-specific decisions. And, you know, anyone can have an opinion on something, but the bottom line is, really, you need to do what's best for you. You're the
right.
one living, you know, your own life and creating what your own destiny is. And she's an educated, empowered, mm-hmm. you know, smart woman. And she didn't have to write that piece.
Right.
She didn't have to come back and do it. She did. Do I wish that she had perhaps reached out and co-wrote it with a genetics expert? I do, because as an advocate and a health advocate, I obviously want the most education surrounding,
right.
you know, the information that's out there. And I do feel like there were things that could definitely have been much better articulated. However, the fact that she even did it to begin with, I have to applaud her and be thankful, because it allows us, number one, to even have this conversation.
Right.
that we're having right now, and media outlets interested in talking about it some more. And I view that as only moving forward in progress.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the people who say, well, she just did it because she wanted exposure, they've never had to take the BRCA test or seen a genetic counselor or worry about, well, my mother died of cancer, so this may happen to me, or be a previvor who I've known
a lot of people don't realize how actually very dangerous these gene mutations
right.
are and can be. And I think that's a big piece of the, you know, education component.
And advocacy. I mean, like you said, Georgia, you were informing your own doctors about what was going on. It's like, well, you know, it's, I mean, I don't understand why genetics isn't more at the forefront of cancer diagnosis and part of your whole treatment.
I think that's changing, though.
Well, yes.
I think we're definitely bringing awareness to that, and I think that is changing for sure. And especially in regards to Lynch syndrome, I think our advocacy measures have really made a difference within this past year. So
that's
definitely going to change.
Right, because
we're reaching out to doctors. We're mm-hmm. we're reaching out to general practitioners, gynes, gastros.
Mm-hmm.
You know, doctors who really should know about Lynch, but don't, unfortunately. So we're really trying to tailor our work to reach them, and less on the previvors, because
yes.
they already, we have a number of people that are, you know, we're friends with on Facebook. You know, it's like preaching to the choir. You know, what we need to do is expand our tentacles and reach the people who need to know. And even patients who have a strong family history, especially when the family history presents itself under the age of 50 for things like colon or ovarian or, mm-hmm. or breast cancer. And then the other thing I wanted to point out, and Ellen will probably want to piggyback on this, is that many of the women that are being tested for the BRCA mutations who test negative may want to reconsider if they have a strong family history of BRCA, breast cancer or ovarian. They may want to consult with their genetic counselor and be tested for Lynch syndrome as well. So Ellen might want to talk more about that.
Yes, Ellen.
Absolutely. Because I think, Mel, one of the things that we're finding is that the pace of genetic research, it's moving so quickly that it's really not fair of us to think that the average physician or the average nurse or the average PA mm-hmm. can keep up with genetic technology. It's really changing that quickly. What we want them to be able to do is to screen their patient population and determine who should go on to see a genetic counselor or a genetic specialist so that that genetic counselor can really take a detailed 4 or 5 generation pedigree and say, we ought to be testing you for BRCA. We ought to be testing you for Lynch syndrome or, mm-hmm. no, wait a minute, this is Peutz-Jeghers. This is Cowden disease. This is P53. And quite frankly, I mean, I teach in medical schools. I've taught in medical schools now for 18 years. I get 45 minutes. I'm not going to be able no. to teach them everything they need to know in that period of time. And there are just too many areas of medicine to expect right. our physicians to also be genetic counselors. But as Georgia points out, many of these syndromes share features in common. So if you're listening to this and you have a personal history of ovarian cancer and a family history of ovarian cancer, you may have been tested for BRCA, and if it came back negative, you may have been told, you know, congratulations, it's not hereditary. Mm-hmm. That may not be true, because particularly if in your family the constellation of cancers includes ovarian cancer plus or minus uterine cancer plus or minus colorectal cancer, this could be Lynch syndrome. Okay. Or perhaps the only finding in your family is a sebaceous adenoma or carcinoma in addition to ovarian cancer or colon cancer. That could be Lynch syndrome as well. And we're not going to be able to bring everyone up to the level that right. they can do genetic counseling for the masses, but that's not the goal. We just want them to know when to refer.
Right. And that was my point. I feel that, you know, when I was going through it, yes, I had done my research about BRCA, which was about almost eight years ago. But, you know, genetic testing was very expensive then. We had the whole lawsuit with Meridian. And now I think...
Myriad,
mm-hmm. sorry. Thank you.
Mel, please yes. forgive me, but the correct pronunciation is BRCA.
BRCA, sorry. They're all correcting me. I feel like I need to sit in the corner now. I'm kidding.
Oh, no.
I'm just joking. Yes, BRCA with, you said, Myriad. Because
right.
of that, genetic testing has gotten cheaper. And, you know, even if it isn't, you know, make a payment plan because it's important. It's your life. It's, you know, you're not going to be able to know anything about your genetics unless you take the test.
And the costs have come down due to competition
right.
as well.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Even if it's
yeah.
even if you have insurance and you think, well, it's still expensive, you know, it's like what's more important, your money or your life, you know.
And I can also say that we're able to get the vast majority of people covered
right.
for this testing if okay. you do the process correctly from the
awesome.
Clinician's point of view.
Excellent.
And so see a genetic counselor. It's very likely that they'll be able to get you covered if you have a personal or a family history that warrants testing.
Awesome. See, I didn't know that either. You guys are just informing me as well as the listeners. So that's
well,
awesome.
Good.
Awesome. So
yeah, I would not recommend genetic testing without a genetic counselor.
No.
I deal with a lot of people who have been recently diagnosed with Lynch syndrome, and the majority of them who are racked with anxiety and fear are the ones who have not spoken with a genetic counselor.
Oh.
They just feel like they're a ticking time bomb. And that is why I really emphasize genetic counseling in a lot of what I do. I think it's absolutely imperative to speak with a genetic counselor. I can't overemphasize that enough.
Right, and I do that's one of my big platforms as well, is that genetic counselors are key in the genetic testing equation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in my situation, my genetic counselor actually referred me to a high-risk oncologist. And that is actually where I got even more information is with that oncologist. But just going back for one second, I just want to say that when I am positive for BRCA1. When I did get some new family history after I did test positive for that, I found some death certificates and had new family history. I went back to my genetic counselor, and at that point, they really wanted to test me for Lynch syndrome as well. Because of the colon cancer and because of the uterine cancer in my family. And so I did test, and I tested negative for Lynch. However, I think it's important to note, we still don't know. That still could be going on in my family. Look, my siblings, my dad, they could still have it because no one has tested for Lynch other than myself. So, you know, is it rare? I guess, yes. Ellen, you can speak to that, but I'm also an Ashkenazi Jewish family who has very interesting history in terms of cousins marrying. And so there's a lot of genetic strange things going on there.
You know, we over the years, I can think of a handful of families who had more than one genetic syndrome. Some of them had more than one hereditary cancer syndrome. Others had more than one genetic syndrome, one that had nothing to do with cancer and one that did. And we also had a handful of people who carried both a BRCA1 and a BRCA2 mutation, although, of course, it's rare.
Right. So we're almost out of time, but I do want to mention you were talking about your Twitter chat. So your next, or tweet chat, you're probably going to correct me on that too, but it is a tweet chat, right?
It is.
I'm just kidding. Just messing with you guys because it's Monday. It's a tweet chat.
Georgia, do you want to talk about in the tweet chat?
Georgia?
You want
or
me
I
to
can
talk
mention
about the tweet chat?
It's hashtag HCChat. And our next one's going to be, we're trying to do it monthly, April 29th, 9 p.m. We're going to do it Wednesday nights.
Eastern.
Okay. On Eastern time, yes. Okay. And you can go to at HC_chat or hashtag HCChat. And the next topic will be sex after hysterectomy or oophorectomy. So if you have questions pertaining to that, it should be a very interesting conversation.
Excellent. And you get a lot of, I know Amy was telling me you get a lot of people on your tweet chat.
We do. We actually, I believe the last one we had, I think we had 22 million impressions.
Wow.
Which was kind of, which was amazing and crazy. And the one before that, I think we were at, 9 million. So we seem to be doubling.
That's excellent.
So we know we're reaching a lot of people, definitely, which is the goal of all of this.
Right. Of course. Because the more people who are informed, then the better.
Absolutely. And Mel, if there are people who are listening who aren't able to make that date and time, it's important to know that you can go onto Twitter after that and simply follow the hashtag, and you can at least join the conversation and see what was said and reply to things after the fact.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, we are almost at it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And they can also look up the transcript from that, from the tweet chat, too, if they want.
Right, because talking about sex, even though you know it's important, it's an important topic. It might be a little embarrassing for some people, so it's important
to
check out.
They can hide behind Twitter, though. It'll make them feel.
Start your own new Twitter if you want it. If you want to learn more about it. I'm just kidding. So that'll be on April 29th at 9 p.m. Eastern. Hashtag HCChat. You can find Ellen at mygenecouncil.com. Is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent, Amy. Where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BRCA Responder, or just type my name in on the internet, and I think I come up a lot of places.
You're everywhere, everywhere. And of course, I have, I have LynchSyndrome.com. See, that's chemo brain coming for you right there.
That's correct.
So sorry about that.
And I think we should put a plug in if people are interested in genetic counseling.
Yes.
NSGC.org, that's a way you can find a genetic counselor near you.
Excellent.
That's right. And there are also some genetic counseling services by phone. If there's not a genetic counselor in your geographic area, you can go to several services, including Informed DNA for those services.
Awesome. Well, thank you, ladies. This has been informative. I learned some things, and well, hopefully that a lot of people will be able to get a hold of you after this show airs. And we'll keep it up on the website, the podcast, and all that good stuff. And I'll wrap it up like I usually do. This is Mel Majoros. I am the Cancer Warrior. You can always find me on Facebook because I am a Facebook junkie. Check out my blog, thecancerwarrior.blogspot.com, and my updated website, thecancerwarrior.net. And as always, life looks pretty good from where I'm sitting, sending you good vibes. It's the Cancer Warrior on EmpowerRadio.com.